Great. Hey, Mike McCormack from Water Tower Research. Pleased to have Randy Jones, the CEO of TEN Holdings, with us today. With that, I'll turn it over to Randy.
All right. Thank you, Mike. All right, guys. So 20 minutes, going to give you our tale, tell you a little bit about TEN Holdings. Here's all the stuff I can't say. I think you guys have heard that before. So TEN Holdings is a holding company. TEN stands for the Events Network, events plural. And the plan behind the holding company is to build out a set of companies that satisfy some type of corporate Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 events. I'll explain a little bit more about that and some of the types of things that we do. But we're basically an events company. Our mission is really to be the leader in multiple different types of corporate events. And there are really three types of events that we do currently. One is a physical event. So if you think about it, if you've ever been like these guys in the back, just as an example, if you've ever been to an event where there's a live audience, there's sound, there's video, there's potentially recording, that's the physical or live event that we do. Secondly, we have a rich history in very high production quality streaming webcasting. And that's really kind of been our main focus in the history of the company. And I'll give you some examples of some of those types of things. And then finally, there's what's called hybrid, which is you have a live event, but you also want to make it available to people remotely, and you stream it at the same time. A little bit about our history. The company was originally founded about 14 years ago. It was acquired by a company called VQ, which is about a $100 million a year publicly traded on Tokyo Exchange Japanese company. The reason that they acquired it is they have a division that's about $30 million a year in revenue that does the virtual webcasting in Japan. And they wanted to kind of buy their way into the U.S. market. But very much a global company, have reached all around. In terms of how the brands are stacked up, VQ is the name of the company that's the parent. Even after our IPO, which was about 3 months ago, they still own about 80% of the stock. TEN Holdings is the holding company. And TEN Events is currently the one operating company within that. And that's the virtual broadcasting company. Here's my smiling picture. I'm the CEO of both TEN Holdings and TEN Events. There's a gentleman who was the original founder of VQ in Japan, Naoki Mashita, Mashita-san, who is Group CEO of VQ and is also with me on our board. And we have a pretty strong team. That's Erica, who's trying to probably stay anonymous there, sitting there. She runs IR and marketing communications for us. About half of the people that are on the team came from industry and have worked the event space. And maybe the other half I've brought in and have worked with me in some of my previous ventures. This is my 10th company. I'm kind of a software guy. This is the fourth one that I've been involved with that went public. It's the second one I helped take public, and the first one is CEO. But we have a very, very strong team. Again, I mentioned this before just to give you guys some examples of the virtual events, the hybrid events, and the in-person or live events. As an example, one of our, and you guys in the back probably appreciate this, one of our contracts, if you've ever been to Cisco Live, which is a very, very large networking conference out in Las Vegas, one of our conferences, we provide all the TVs and light boards for the exhibit hall. In some of the virtual events, and I'll give you a few examples of how we do these here in a second. But the big difference, and we call these things shows, is the production quality. So when we broadcast one of our shows over the web, it feels more like you're watching Monday Night Football or a Fox News broadcast. We have a lot of the same capabilities for the visual appearance. So as an example, I'm forced to say Big Four consulting firm. It's one of our big customers. When their CEO over on 300 Madison Ave gets recorded, and he does a live broadcast for a town hall to typically between 50,000 and 80,000 live employees, he uses our technology, our people, to both capture that and then broadcast that around the world. And the reason that they use us, and I think this is important, we get asked this question a lot, They have everything. This is a very sophisticated, very well funded company. They use every tool, they have their own teams, everything else. What they would say is they use us because one, the broadcast quality of the event is just significantly higher, and two, the fidelity of the platform to scale to that size is the best option that's available for them. So some of the types of virtual events that we do, anything from annual user conferences, product launches, another interesting use case is continuing education. So if you are a CPA and you need to get so many continuing credit hours each year to keep your license current, one of our customers runs a series of courses, that's what they call them, where you can attend. It's interactive. You have to answer a certain number of questions. If you get a certain number correct, you pass, and our system I think this is so funny. I could make some comments about his announcing voice. Reminds me of certain places, but anyway. If you take that CPA course and you pass, our system automatically generates a digital certificate back to the attendee so you can turn it in for to the accounting board. That particular customer, this is one of the big four, certified 300,000 CPAs in at least one course last year. But these are just some of the examples of some of the types of events that we can do. All right, so this is kind of an important slide. These are some of the customers that we've worked with. It's pretty broad. There isn't a vertical that we necessarily do a lot with. I should probably note that we are based in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, which is kind of outside of Philadelphia. And there's a lot of pharmaceutical companies kind of in that neck of the woods. So we do a lot with pharmaceutical, finance, tech. Really, it's pretty broad. It doesn't really matter. The message and the content is somewhat anonymous to us. It's really the platform and the people and the quality of the program for each of these customers. I guess with my logo, you can figure out if you pay attention which one of the big four I keep referring to. I'm not supposed to say. All right, keep rolling here. So again, you know, this is some of how we deliver our full service virtual events, some of the things that make us unique. I would say it's the technology, it's the scalability, it's the experience of the team, and I just think it's the engagement. We actually track what's called an engagement score. So for your attendees, often that's very important, where you can see how well you did. You know, and some of that survey, but some of that's other technology, including some of the stuff that we're working on with AI, where you can really hopefully help figure out, you know, was this a success? It's interesting. We're all super spoiled, right? So like post-COVID and with our phones, you can get any caliber, quality event, streaming, media, anything on your phone. And for many of these corporate customers who spend tons of money, and they're very large, your employees, your analysts, your prospects, your customers, your whatever, show up to one of your event, and it looks like you're watching something that's 15 years old. Sorry. I don't know what I'm doing there. Let's see. Smart device. Not terrible. Okay, so there's a huge TAM for this. The there's really limitless opportunity in terms of how this can grow. And I guess this is an important slide, too. If you talk about where we're headed, this one and the next one, and I think I'm almost finished. I'll set you free. So in terms of how we're going to grow, we're obviously going to enhance our proprietary platform and continue to build out our technology. It's been around for 14 years. It's great. Works really well. But you continually have to, you know, make sure that it's leading edge. We're also building a new product, which we announced on Monday in an early adopter called 10 Pro, which is a self-service SaaS platform to run your own events. So the way we've done it historically is it's full service. And I explain like this is a steakhouse, an example. So Scott and I were going to go to dinner. We want to walk in. We want to sit down. We want to order. We want them to cook it. We want them to serve it. We want to eat it. We want to pay for it. We want to leave. We don't want to clean up. We don't have a kitchen. We don't want to do any of that kind of stuff. Full service. Some subset of the market, though, wants the ability to run their own meetings and do it in a self-service capacity. And historically, we haven't sold the product as a platform standalone, but we are getting into that market. So we're pretty excited about that. In terms of growth too, so remember what I said about TEN Holdings. It's a holding company. We have one operating company, but the plan is to acquire other events-based companies and roll them under our umbrella. We just went public, I guess, about 2.5 months ago. I'll tell you the story in case you look it up. First day was glorious. We priced at six. We got to 8.5. We had good volume. Closed at 7.5. It's fantastic. Second day, it's a train wreck. Somebody put a 1 million share naked short position on a 1.6 million float stock, and the stock just got hammered. Since then, it's kind of been up and down. We've seen pretty healthy volumes, but we're really just focused on executing and operating. Ultimately, most likely, we're going to raise more capital, and we're going to buy some additional events companies and make it grow. The snowball of TEN Holdings will continue to grow. In terms of some of the roll-up strategy, I mentioned that there's the $30 million piece of business that my parent company owns in Japan that does exactly what we do. One theory is that could potentially, in one shape, way, shape, or form, become part of TEN Holdings. We are actively looking for strategic acquisitions for other events-based companies that fit into the portfolio. It really could be any type of event company, but most likely our common denominator will always be into the corporate marketplace. There are a lot of cool event companies, like people ask me about concerts and music and things like that. And while I'm a huge fan, we're probably not going to go down that path and just stick to the various different types of events that Fortune 1000 companies use. Then we're going to continue to expand our portfolio. It's worth noting that the Japanese parent has a number of technology products that they have built that we could potentially leverage on the TEN Holdings side. Right now, TEN Holdings is really U.S.-focused, but our parent, as I've mentioned, really has a strong position in Japan. Fade to black. That was just a brief introduction to TEN Holdings. I appreciate you guys listening through it. Since it's just so small, any questions? Does anybody have any curiosity? There doesn't have to be any, but certainly welcome.
Yeah. I mean, I just hoping to do some of the recent stuff, right? I'm just curious, can you explain a little bit about what the most recent debt settlement agreement was recently with Sunbeam?
Yes.
It's really large.
Yeah, so let me explain what that is. It's what's called a 3A10, and it's a finance vehicle. It looks a little odd. I wasn't familiar with it, to be honest, before we got introduced to that. But the way it works is basically a lender. You sell a chunk of your, well, first of all, you set up a vehicle, and it's $5 million. Then when, at our discretion, we issue shares to that lender at a small discount of what it's trading. Then the way the 3A10 vehicle works is they take that money, and they pay off your liabilities. In theory, if we had $5 million in debt, we would enter into this 3A10 when we are ready, and some of that has to do timing-wise, obviously, with the stock price. Like, if it's good, you want to participate. If it's lower, you don't. We would say which liabilities we want them to pay off. We would pay those in shares. The lender gets the shares, and they either sell them or they keep them. That's up to them. But then they pay down whatever the debt is. So far, and this is in our 10-Q, of the $5 million, we've used about $1 million. And that money was paid back to my parent for money that they had advanced us to operate. So it's really, it says settlement, but it's odd. It's not, it is a legal proceeding, but it's not like it was a judgment or anything like that. It's really just a funding vehicle. Pretty creative, pretty clever, less fees. I had never, until recently, knew that this was even an option, but it's a relatively standard thing that companies our size and microcap companies do to help buy down their liabilities. I think I may have mentioned, even after our IPO, the parent still owns 80% of the company. So, you know, capital is precious to us, but somewhat our currency is the options and the shares that we still have. And in your first year as a publicly traded company on the Nasdaq, you only have a handful of options to convert additional shares post-IPO. Good question. I probably maybe went a little too deep for everybody else, but we don't know. The Nasdaq has been not very helpful in helping us figure that out. The day that it got shorted, like 6 million shares traded, And I'll highlight, if you go and you look at our stock, it's pretty interesting. Like, some days we trade what I would consider to be like a typical microcap stock where it's 300,000, 500,000. We've had multiple days where we've traded over, if you can believe this, 100 million shares in a single day. Total potential outstanding float after the 3A10 and everything, if it was all out there, is maybe 8 million shares, 9 million roughly. So we don't really have a definitive answer. We don't know who did the short. We're not really sure what drives that volume. Some theories are maybe it's algo trading, maybe it's a hedge fund. Often when the volume picks up and really gets high, and this is an observation, and you can see it in pre-market, that's on days that it does really well. Like last week, just as an example, it went up 100% in one day. But then it has come back down. So there's plenty of people making money on our stock, I think, going up and coming down. But it's not very traditional right now. And Erica, who runs marketing, we get asked all the time, like, what was announced and what happened and what changed. And so far, almost nothing that we've done that we can tell has been directly correlated to either making it go up or seeing it come down. The only thing that was, and it may have been random, but we announced, when the stock got pounded, we announced a $1 million, up to $1 million share buyback program with no minimum commitment, with no commitment to time. It was basically just our way to say, hey, we think the shares are underpriced, and it came under pressure. And the day that we announced that, the stock did have an uptick. Could have been buy it, could have been random, but it's been an interesting experience in the 10-week, 12-week, whatever it is that we've been public. Our plan really is just to execute on the strategy. If we do that, we think we'll not only be able to make the company larger, but attract more institutional investors who want to take real positions in long, and not people maybe that are just looking to take advantage of it going up and down. Anybody else? Well, you're the only one in here. You get to answer all the questions. No offense to anybody. I'm teasing. Yeah, so they're all related, just so you know. So it's a good question. I'll be happy to answer it. So the CFO was really a VP of finance who had worked with the company for a while and who never had public accounting experience. And when you to go public on the NASDAQ, you have to have a CFO. So we moved him into that position. With that came a lot of responsibility. I will tell you, the process of going public for a microcap company our size was brutal and grueling and infinitely longer and harder than we had ever expected. Had we changed CFOs during that process, we would have had to refile our S1 and start over. So there was a bit of an understanding as we worked through that process that we would most likely be considering a transition. The two independent directors are personal contacts of the CFO. And the reason that they were on the board and wanted to participate with this was because of that individual. And when we mutually parted ways, they opted to as well. So, you know, not ideal. I will tell you that we've been in at this point, maybe 90-day formal search for a new CFO, and I think I have him found. He's great, and he's got, I think, considerably more experience and maybe a little bit tougher skin for this environment. It has been a challenge. You know, I think if the stock had performed brilliantly and the IPO was chugging along and we didn't have to deal with a lot that we weren't expecting, it would have been a different experience for a lot of us. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's business. But we'll backfill that individual here right quick, and you'll know about it. It's funny. I was joking. I said, now that we're public, I had to file an 8K because I had a Diet Coke. But everything that happens to us that's material, you know, we'll file formal 8Ks and or for stuff that we really want to announce, you'll see a press release, including naming the new CFO. So the plan was always the roll-up strategy. I think the Japanese parent has two challenges. One is They're a $100 million company on the Tokyo Exchange that's made up of about six different businesses that are very disparate. They're really like six different companies. They don't get a lot of credit for, especially on the Tokyo Exchange, the sum of the parts. Remember, they have a piece of this business that does the virtual broadcasting that's about $30 million in revenue. So the reason that they bought the company originally in 2021 was to buy their way into the U.S. market. But the goal was always to buy other event companies and have that be its own unit. They didn't think they would get a lot of credit for that on the Tokyo Exchange, and they're already public. Because a lot of that is tech-enabled, there was a real attraction to the NASDAQ and the U.S. market space. And if you think about it, even if they own 100% of the company, how do you monetize that equity if that's what you want to use to raise additional capital for growth? And in theory, potentially, you know, you could have done maybe venture or private equity or something like that. But really, especially if the stock performs, you know, at $6 a share when it was at that, the company had a $100 million valuation. It's obviously a lot lower than now at whatever it's trading at, 50 cents or wherever it is today. But the concept was leverage the NASDAQ, tech-enabled, better avenue than what they already have, which is on the Tokyo Exchange, probably get more value of some of the parts put together versus all, and come up with some liquidity so that we can execute on the strategy. I was going to say, yours keep getting harder and harder. I'm going to cut you off. You asked a few. I'm just teasing. Thank you, everybody. We'll let your next presenter up here. And I'm here if anybody's interested. Come by and see us. Table 20. Thank you.